how does Speaker Pelosi make sure that she gets the votes? Do you think she has the votes now? Some people think she only has 200 votes at this point.
Well, I have enormous respect and confidence for Speaker Pelosi, and she has proven herself over and over again as a leader capable of organizing a strategy to get to the requisite 218 votes, and I'm confident she can do it again in this case. I mean, I think that there's just too much at stake, and I'm one of those who believes that far more important than any short-term political consideration is the historic opportunity this represents and the magnitude of the change in direction for health policy in this country that this reflects. And I think she will find the votes eventually. And by eventually, I think sometime this month.
Why do you think this has been such a difficult, drawn-out process? And looking back, are there things the Democrats should have done differently?
I think that if you look back, this has been the most successful effort to date in history. I mean, this is the first time the Senate and the House have both passed comprehensive health reform. So it is what we've always said it is. And that's a very, very hard thing to do. It's been hard for, you know, over the course of seven presidents and decades of effort. And, you know, it's not changed. I think there are a lot of reasons for it. One is that you're talking about 18% of the economy, very, very high financial stakes involved for everybody. That's number one. Number two, arguably it's the most complex sector of the economy. People always talk about the 2,000-plus page bill. Can you imagine what it would be if you were to put the entire sector in bill form that we currently are using? And how many thousands of pages would that be? So the complexity alone is a very significant factor. And then you add to that, of course, the huge ideological debate that's gone on for generations, and that is, what is the proper role of government in the health sector, in the health marketplace? You know, I maintain, and I feel very strongly about this, that we don't have a health system. We never have. We have health subsystems, but we have a health market that's partly public and partly private. It's a hybrid market. And, you know, and it's probably the most opaque of all of the sectors of our economy. And it's hard to fix what you can't see. And so it's very difficult as you're writing policy to fix problems that are as opaque as those in healthcare. So you have all of those issues, and not to mention the, you know, sort of the calculation the Republicans are making that, you know, you can benefit perhaps politically, just as they feel they did in 94, by causing the Democrats to fail.
How do you see the parallels or the non-parallels between now and then?
I'd say the biggest non-parallel factor is that you've got stakeholders who are much more supportive of reform now than ever before. I mean, I think the stakeholders are the ones who, you look at the AMA position, I mean, that's probably the best example of any. I mean, they've been fairly persistent in their support. I know that there's internal divisions, but as an organization, they've done it, and so have the pharmaceutical manufacturers. They've hung in there. And, you know, even the insurance industry has indicated support for reform. Just there are aspects to this that they would not support. But I think that whether it's AHIP or pharma or AMA, you've got a lot more a recognition that we don't have the luxury this time to fail. Per capita costs were $3,400 in 94. They're $8,000 now. The level of uninsured was what, 37 million, and now it's, I think it's over 50. When you say if, I mean, what and the reason I assert that is because with every 1% of unemployment, you have 1 million more who are uninsured, and so you've got huge consequences for the uninsured given the state of the economy. But whether it's quality, access, or cost, you can look at all the numbers. They've dropped precipitously, and we've been able to demonstrate, if anything, out of these last 15 years, that incremental reform doesn't work. I mean, we've tried incremental reform with SCHIP and with the passage of Part D, and, you know, you can look at maybe portability and a couple of things here and there, but with our best effort at incremental reform, we've seen everything go south, and it's going to continue to do that, it seems to me, until we put in place the corrective policy building blocks to address this more comprehensively.
In terms of the polls, it looks like people are either split or leaning towards being opposed to the health reform thing. So how does that play in with whether or not something is going to happen in Congress? It seems like people don't really want it to happen. What is your thoughts on why polls are showing that?
Well, I think it's human nature to be concerned about the unknown, and there's been a lot of fear generated. I'm not saying Republicans necessarily did it intentionally, but one of the consequences of this debate is to generate a tremendous amount of uncertainty and fear about the implications that this could have for people. But, you know, I think we put way too much emphasis on polling as a factor in how we make our decisions. Should it be a factor? Of course. This is also an issue of governance. I mean, I think that we've got to demonstrate as a country that we're able to tackle the big issues of the day. And we've made progress on the economy, but I think we've got a long way to go as the rest of the world looks at the United States today, and they see what I estimate to be well over 50 million people uninsured, and the system that they have compared to the market that we have, and they wonder, well, what is it about the United States' lack of capacity to address this problem? And I think it says something about democracy and our republic and the quality of governance, and I think we have to be cognizant of that as well.